Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kam ngā mauri to all our Kiribati listeners who wrapped up their language week over the weekend, and welcome everyone to Neat and Footy, the best place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league world, rugby league and rugby union worlds.
Don't forget us, mates.
My name is Tinidar Arona, and yes, that was my koe Sammy Wykes, the man of rugby union. Sammy, happy Monday, brother.
Happy Monday, Koraba.
Koraba. What's Koraba mean?
I think that's thank you in Kiribati.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully Google Translate saved me quickly there. Yeah, just did a little quick search, and hopefully I got that right and I don't get in trouble from all our Kiribati listeners for getting it wrong, but everything's going well.
You're over the state of origin hangover now?
Nah, not really. Still don't mind boasting about it every now and again. Probably not as much as before, but I believe Neja Dali, they're going to pay their bets.
Yep, they are. The Queenslanders do pay their debts, and we had a wager on the series with our friends over at Neja Daily.
Looking forward to this feed.
And yeah, the winner got the feed, so we'll be looking for some catering here in Sydney, New South Wales. I just want the Big Island feast. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, me too. But what else we've got to look forward to is what's coming up on the show. Round 19, plenty of celebrations to celebrate from the weekend, especially our Tongan men. Nela Tupou from the Roosters absolutely killed it in that game. Nations Championships and Nations Cup results in the Rugby Union, and it wasn't the best of weekends for our Pacific Island brothers. So we'll go through that. NRLW and Cook Islands international rep Kiana Takairangi will sub in for Shelley Long. Shelley Long is away, sick, not too sure, but there is something going around at the moment. And our guest for today, T, NRLW superstar from the Parramatta Eels.
Yes, well, we've got Kiana Takairangi, and we've got her teammate, Lindsay Tui, who will be joining us here on the show, Neat & Footy. Now, Lindsay plays for the Parramatta Eels. She also represents the Fetu Samoa. And I remember when me and you, Sammy, were over in Suva, Fiji, for the PAC Champs in 2024.
Yeah, I think it was 24.
And we're doing some sideline commentary, or actually just sitting next to the sideline.
We pretended like we were doing the commentary. The microphone wasn't plugged in anywhere.
And it was during the Fetu Samoa versus the Tongan Women's Pacific Champs game. And Lindsay Tui was on the right center. And I remember her scoring a try, and you weren't happy, but I was like, damn, she can play some footy, this girl.
Yeah, she can. She broke the hearts of a lot of Tongans, and I thought she celebrated a little bit too much, her and her teammates. But I'm only joking. They should have, because that was a massive game for Fetu Samoa as part of their qualification for the World Cup, which we hopefully see Lindsay a part of this year.
She also comes from a very competitive family, and we had her younger sister, Dawn Tui.
Yeah, on that Pacific Sports Show.
Yep. So, stay tuned, listen to the stories, and I always love hearing when family members compete against each other. So I'm sure we'll get a couple of good stories out of Lindsay Tui today on Neat & Footy.
Moment of the week.
Yes, well, my moment of the week, I am going to give this little space of our show on Neat & Footy to the great man, Daniel Tupou. We mentioned last Friday that he would be playing his 300th NRL game, all for the same club, the Sydney Roosters, and he becomes the fifth ever Sydney Rooster to play 300 games. More so what I honour and...
Only five have played.
Only five, yeah.
Wow.
So there's...
Minicello.
Rickardson, Luke Rickardson,
Orbison,
and Jared Wader Hargraves.
There you go for the one. That's a special group to be amongst.
I believe they may be the only club that have five 300-plus gamers Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty
And there's
sure
a Tongan in there.
And there's a Tongan in there.
Shut the gates. How good's that?
I got to attend this game. It was part of the Sydney Roosters Old Boys round. And, you know, I got to catch
32
up
32 game specialist.
Yeah.
Yes.
32 more than most others.
I know. I'm saying that's a good thing. I'm not having a go at you.
I was more one of my friends and said, oh, I'm going to the Old Boys round. So last week I was like, called one of my very good friends at the Roosters saying, hey, is Old Boys round on? They're like, yep, here's the link. And then turned up, and I'm like, man, please don't be the only guy here with my friend and I not know anyone else. Because there were some, like, when I say Old Boys, like, Roosters have been around for a long time.
I was going to have a stab at when they were established, but I'm not going to.
As I walk down, I see similar hairstyle to you and a big brown body, and I was just gone. Beauty. I've got my mate Sia Soliola is here. So I got to catch up with Sia and the Paya brothers, Mickey and Lupini Paya. Lupini, I got to play with when I first went to the Roosters. And so we went up there, caught up, and then guess who walks in? And just it's a
Sonny Bill.
It's a special, he always does something like this where Dylan Napa.
Oh, Dylan Napa.
So Cook Island International, he walks in. He walks in with Daniel Tupou's Tongan International World Cup jersey.
Wearing it. Yes.
And I've got,
represent.
All right, that's swag right there. And I like that call. But that game was my last ever professional rugby league game. And that was the game where we lost like 100 and something to 10.
But you scored the last try. That's all that
scored
matters.
Scored the last try. But yeah.
Kicked the goal as well, didn't you? No.
Yes, kicked the goal.
Yep,
but that was a cool recognition for.
So when are we getting to Nella about
Daniel
this?
Because I feel like and then. Obviously, Daniel, Roosters played the Eels. They beat him 28 points to 12. And the crazy thing is, on his 300th game, he scores 3 tries.
That's unheard of.
Not one, not two, but 3.
Quality tries as well.
Yep, jumps in the air, does the Daniel Tupou, Air Tupou special. But just the way that the club and the NRL celebrated this game. You know, I know we had Jason Taumalolo play his 300th game, and they had Tongan royalty attend Jason's game. They also attended Daniel Tupou's game after as well.
When you think about the Roosters and the proud history that they've had for such a long time, the type of players that have worn that jersey, and then just the staff as well, you know, Nick Politis and those type of guys. Like, I know that they celebrated Jason's 300th last week and it was a special occasion, but it just seems like the Roosters really go that one step further to make sure that they really appreciate the players that have worn that jersey. Is that the feel that you got as well?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's also the guy that Daniel Tupou is. Yeah, the human being he is, and it's the reason why a lot of players acknowledged him during this game and even before the game. During captain's run, they had a lot of the former players that he had won premierships with go down. Like I've seen Frank Paul Nuasala down there, Sean Kennedell, Anthony Minicello, and they all had this moment with Daniel Tupou at the captain's run. And then Jared Wade Hargraves actually done a haka with a few of the boys as well for Nella. But
did you see how they stitched Nella up with the interview?
Oh, with Angus Crichton.
Yeah. He didn't want to be interviewed and make it about him. So they said, you've got some jersey fitting that you have to come to, some promo shoot. And then they had it all set up for him there to have a good sit down. But I'm glad we got to hear some of that interview from Nella, because he's the most humble player that you would ever come across. He's up there with David Mead, those type of players in my mind.
Yeah, and he'll go down as one of the greats. So much love to Daniel Tupou, and awesome work throughout your career. And I know you've got a few more games and a lot of petrol left in them legs, brother. So congratulations from everyone here at Nijin Footy.
Hey everyone, Alex Johnson here from the PNG Kumuls, the South Sydney Rabbitohs. You're here with Nijin Footy.
All right, we're going to continue with rugby league team. A couple of scores that I'm looking at here. There were some big ones, and I'm not sure what's going on with the Dolphins, but I'm gonna make sure that you tell me what's going on here, because I need to give someone a phone call to say, hey, when are you back? Are you ready to go? How's the injury? Because your team needs you.
Yeah, last Friday on Nijin Footy, we spoke about, we'll get to the Dolphins game, but we spoke about the Warriors and Tigers being an important game for both teams. Look, there's been a lot of noise around Jerome Luai as well, and how the club are wanting to free up some money and release him from his contract 1 year early because he's going to the PNG Chiefs. We covered that. A bit of that on on Friday. But as more news comes out, we'll keep everyone up to date here on Nation Footy. But the Warriors, they had a big win over the Tigers in Campbelltown, Sydney. And 32 points to 6, they won. But this pushes the Tigers down to 13th place on the NRL ladder. And I said last week, you need to keep winning these games. As we go further into these next few weeks, these wins are crucial to a lot of teams. So
what a slide down the ladder that's been for the Tigers.
Yeah, they had a great start. I think they were
top four, I think, after round six or something like that. And to see them at the bottom, I can only feel for the players and their fans. You know, there was so much hope built on this season, but yeah, it's not meant to be.
And then speaking of the Dolphins, the Sharks, they jump up to fourth spot with an enormous win over the Dolphins, 11 unanswered tries. And Nico Hines, he was perfect, kicked 11 goals from 11, and the Sharks won this one 66 points to 0. Yes, the Dolphins did not score 1 point. Now, we're talking about the same club, the same team that have won 8 games in a row this year, but they go in and lose 66 points to 0.
What's that stat in the NRL if you concede 60? No team that's conceded 60 points or 50 points has ever won a premiership.
Yeah, I'm not too sure.
I think that's somewhere around that stat anyway. But for the Dolphins, you know, like, how does a team that's performing so well, very consistent, especially in attack, put up a performance like that?
I would say you'd have to look at the players that are missing, and they are key players in that Dolphins team.
Isaiah is one of them.
Isaiah Katoa being a huge part of that 8 in a row and the success they've had so far this year. So no Isaiah, no Hammer from Origin, I believe Max Plath as well. And those are some big, big players. So
yeah, you're not wrong.
Yes, they did. They did lose 66 points, but you've got to also. I'm sorry, they did lose those players, but it's NRL and whoever, like, that next man up mentality. It has to be part of that culture. So I'm pretty sure that look, the coach won't be too happy. But there is also another set. Like, sometimes when you are winning that many games in a row, you know, your next loss is only around the corner. So maybe this is what they need leading into the finals. And it's still, you know, I'd be asking some questions if it was the week before the finals, but because they've still got another, you know, 6-7 rounds to go, I think they'll be fine coming into the back end of the season.
Someone like Christian Wolf, he seems like a person that doesn't like to, you know, like, he doesn't muck around with these type of things. So he's very serious. Like, preparation, attitude is very important to him. Do you think he flushes this throughout the week and just go, that's a one-off? Or do you think they're in for a tough week?
I reckon tough week. I reckon they acknowledge it. They understand where they went wrong. They get back to work, and everyone just puts in that little bit more effort. And then once those other, because what's the other, when the other players come back, they want everyone else humming as well. They don't want to be the reasons why they're winning. They want everyone in tune. So I'm sure that they'll have a big week at training and turn things around. Now, the Rabbitohs, they celebrated Jai Arrow's 31st birthday with the biggest birthday party in the world. They had, you know, the CEO, Peter Vlandis. They had our Australian Prime Minister, Abdo, there. They had the Wiggles. And
the Wiggles were there as well.
The Wiggles were there.
I don't know, out of all the names you just said, the Wiggles is one that caught my caught my ears there.
But the Rabbitohs, they got the win for Jai as well, beating the Newcastle Knights 26 points to 24. And they are slowly climbing up that NRL ladder.
Of course.
Yeah, I believe
the
they are. The Rabbits are
slipping
now
under the radar.
They're sixth on the ladder. And, you know, they're just slowly collecting their wins, creeping up that ladder without making too much noise. But, yeah, the Rabbitohs get
the
win.
Play your best footy at the back end of the season and you'll see what happens. So, yeah, hopefully they've got a lot to play for with Jai.
Yeah.
It's pretty special that they are celebrating and getting around someone like him.
And then in the final game, the Cowboys beat the Seagulls in overtime, 19 points to 18.
I can't believe they scored that try. The Cowboys
won
at the end to win.
That last win was special. And then Scott Drinkwater kicking a field. Sorry, they scored the try. And then that even the score.
Oh, so that was to draw it.
It was
18
all.
Yes.
But he misses the kick, shanks the kick. So they go to overtime. In the 81st minute, Scott Drinkwater kicks a field goal to win. Now the Cowboys squeezed into the 8, jumping the Seagulls with that win. So well done to the Cowboys. And Remember, you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. But before we move over to Rugby Union, Sammy, I just want to send my prayers to Stephen Crichton.
During
the Bulldogs game, he copped a knock as he passed the ball, and then apparently it's been reported he suffered with some nerve damage previously, so they were just out of precaution. They just put him in the stretcher, put him in a brace, but he made sure to let everyone know on social media that he's okay and it's not too serious. So good to hear that good news from Stephen Crichton. Well, that's me, Sammy. Rugby League done. Let's head over to Rugby Union, where I believe there were a few international games that were played.
Bula, my name is Vani Are. You're listening to Nijin Puri.
Yes, round two of the Nations Championships and Nations Cup wrapped up over the weekend. New Zealand beat Italy 47 points to 17. We see France score 30 unanswered points in the second half to beat the Wallabies 42 points to 26. South Africa beat Scotland 42 to 28. Argentina with a win over Wales 35 to 21. And the one that we need to talk about is Fiji copping an absolute hiding against England 73 points to 8.
Damn. 73 points to eight. So that's a 65-point deficit. Where was this game played?
This was played in Liverpool and just on that stadium. That looked like an amazing stadium. They've got their handrails in front of the seat so you can stand up and lean on it forward and, I guess, shout at your team if you need to. I really like the look of that stadium. They look very close.
Anfield, it's called, eh?
I wouldn't have a clue what it's called. The stadium, I just know, is in Liverpool, and it was a Fiji home game. And from the start of it, like, you would have felt like you're in Fiji. Like, they had the performances at the start, and it was, you could hear the DJ playing Fijian songs in the background.
Oh, because it's Fiji home.
It's a Fiji home game. When I'm thinking about the start and watching the beginning of this game and the coverage, I'm thinking this is a special one to be a part of. Like, it's hot in England at the moment as well.
Summer.
So I think it was like 34 degrees when they played. So it was going to be a tough, in tough conditions. But again, I thought everything's geared towards Fiji having a great performance.
And then that didn't happen.
It definitely didn't happen. Like, you know, watching this live and just seeing the final result, it honestly felt deeper than just a poor performance. Now, I mentioned on Friday that the Fiji Rugby Union chairman came out and said that after they lost to Wales, the players have been well looked after, they're well paid now, and he needs to see a better return on his investment for what, being T1 country now. So he just thought they weren't up to par.
Just for not getting the win.
Yeah, just for not getting that win. And I thought the comments were firstly unexpected and definitely not necessary because if we look at the past, man, governance has let our teams down all the time.
Yeah.
So to put it down to, you know, to have those comments like that from the people that are backing you, I just think it's just unnecessary, not needed.
Do you think it comes with a lot of weight and expectation that's not needed on the players?
Oh, I think so. And to be honest, and I feel like that's the way that they played, like with weight on their shoulders. Like, that's probably the first time I've seen a Fijian side, even when they've always had challenges to overcome, but they've always fronted up their energy, their intensity, you know, the ability to want to compete. I've seen that all the time, but that game just, it's like the first time I hadn't seen like that want and care to be able to do well.
And it breaks. Do you think them comments broke the confidence of those players? Whereas if there was the comments from, instead of saying, oh, we expect more, it'd be like, we understand that you're on the other side of the world. We understand that you're away from your families and you're representing our nation. You go out and do your best and we'll always have your back. And then you just see that bit of that energy within the playing group shifts and changes.
I'm personally, that's what I would have, that's what I think as well. I just think if your fans and your management, they come out and support you no matter what. Like, this is the first time they're playing in a competition like this. They've worked so hard to be in the position where they are right now, to be classified as a tier one nation, to play in this Nations Cup as the only Pacific Island nation represented in the top 12 in the world. That's how I'd be looking at it. I wouldn't be expecting Fiji to win this Nations Cup in their first year. But I would just expect them to not just be happy to be there, but, hey, you go out and show the world what we're about. And I thought they did that against Wales.
Yeah.
And I was very happy with the way that they played. But this game against England, as I said, it just looked like the Fiji players were playing with some weight on their shoulders.
What actions or what does that look like when you watch the Wales game compared to this game? Give me some examples of why you think the attitude was different or the energy was different.
Well, I think one of them is like frustration, like playing with frustration, which, you know, led to like poor decision making, and it led to poor execution and giving away like unnecessary penalties. We saw players go off their feet like unnecessarily, like just giving penalties away where you're just like, bro, that belongs in the village style of football, not on the big stage. So they got a yellow card and a red card out of this game. I just thought the way that they were moving the ball, you know, to space, it wasn't like the same way they did it against Wales, where it's sort of like, oh man, one-on-one, he's got him here. But it was sort of a bit more of a relaxed approach compared to the week before. So again, I don't know for sure if like there is a misalignment or something with the, you know, management and players, but I do believe there's something going on because they didn't look happy. And we've said it, how many times have we said it before, when Fijians are happy and smiling when they cross that white line to play, you know they're in for a performance.
Yeah, and it brings confidence. It brings their momentum. And yeah, it seems like they didn't bring it to this game.
And to be honest, I hope I'm wrong about all this. I hope I'm totally wrong and this is just like a one-off poor performance and they can flush it and then move on to their next game. But
who have they got next?
I think they've got Italy next. Hopefully they put in a big performance because there's too much star power in that team. They're too good of a team to put a performance like that back-to-back. So hopefully they get the job done this week. They can turn things around. But let's move over to the Nations Cup. And it wasn't a good weekend for our Tongan and Samoan brothers as well because both teams going down. Samoa lost to Georgia 33 points to 12 and Tonga went down to Spain 32 points to 19. And we'll start with Samoa against Georgia. And for those who actually don't know much about Georgia, I'm assuming you're probably one of those guys that didn't realize Georgia even played rugby. But since they played in the World Cup, I think it was their first World Cup back in 2003, they've improved out of sight. Like a lot of their players are now playing in the French Top 14, the Pro D2, the English Premiership. I played with a couple of them in Japan. And so they've got a lot of experience now going into their national side. And so I go back to that 2003 World Cup. Samoa beat them by 40-odd points back then. England beat them by like over 80 points. So they've been able to bridge the gap in that, you know, over that 20-year period.
They're growing development.
They're growing development. And some like and their culture, like they are hardened society. Like it's like they're always built on surviving some tough conditions. And that's how they play their footy. So when they came up against Samoa on the weekend, bro, their line speed were going after Samoa's ball carriers and they were chopping and just throwing their body at them, and it was very physical. And that's what I believe got them over the line to win, that they just won the physical battle. And then they won the battle around set piece, scrum and line out. Like that's their bread and butter, Georgia. So to be able to go down like that against Georgia, it's by all means, it shouldn't have been like Samoa's victory at all. Like it was always going to be a tough game, but they'll take some good lessons out of that one. And hopefully they can turn things around for this week. And then for Tonga, you know, for Tonga's game against Spain, it's probably similar to all the other nations as well. It's just their error rate and their penalty count is far too great to win Test footy. They do a lot of good things. I loved a lot of their phase play and when they got into their shape and when they got momentum, but it always got undone by a knock-on the floor or a penalty, something that relieved pressure really easy. And you could put it down to preparation, not having a lot of time together. But that's the thing that's undoing our teams. And to, you know, when you think about the way we play the game, I reckon a lot of our characteristics and our style of play comes on being reactive and instinctive. So that's why you get those moments of brilliance. Would you say that? Like can do things freakishly, like just off the cuff.
Yeah. That not afraid to have a crack, afraid to play what's in front. And first people that come to mind is someone like Jerome Luai, that style of footy.
Exactly. So, and you said that last week about the Tigers, because the players around him might not know how he's going to play and he's just so good and sick, you have to react.
Yeah.
But when it's in a bit of a, like an arm wrestle style of game, you need your decision makers planning ahead. Okay, so there's, you know, we're down by 10, there's 10 minutes towards halftime. What's needed now? Like we need more of those players making really good decisions around understanding what's the what where we are in the game.
The flow of the game.
The flow of the game.
Playing high percentage footy. All right, we can't afford to lose pressure now because, you know, we're under the pump. So let's grind through this next 10, 15 minutes, build some momentum, then we can start.
Then we can start getting back into our game. And I feel like that's what's missing for a lot of our teams, to be able to understand their flow, understand when they're not in flow, to be able to get back into it. And that way they can probably start getting more points off the back of it rather than giving away penalties and rather than making errors, which is what's happening at the moment. So really good lessons for all of our Pacific Island teams to take from their games, review well, and hopefully put in another big performance this weekend. And in one other bit of news, we see that, remember Jordy Pataia, our NFL convert from the Reds, he was then went to France to play for Perpignan. Now he's moved to Japan to play for the Urasu D-Rocks. So Israel Folau, he's taking Israel Folau's contract. So
Israel Folau money, I like it.
That's the one. So he's not going to be short a dollar at all, but that leaves us for Rugby Union. Where are we
heading
next?
We are heading over to, I was going to say Shelley Long, but no, we are going to Kiana Takarangi to cover all things NRLW. Well, Sammy, Shelley Long is long gone.
Well, she's not coming back.
No, she's coming back, but okay. she I think she's a bit sick today. So we've called in the big guns, Kiana Takarangi, who has played for a few NRLW clubs, but she is also the current Cook Island captain in rugby league and currently at the Parramatta Eels. Kiana, thank you for joining us on Nijin Footy.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me on.
How's everything going at Parramatta Land? Not off to the greatest start?
What's the matter, Parramatta?
No, boys, honestly, we're kind of asking ourselves the same thing at the moment. But no, not the best start for us. 0-2 to start the season, but hopefully we'll be able to turn it around this week.
Before we get into some footy, we do have Lindsay Tui joining us shortly on the show. Can you share a little story or what's she like in the changing rooms?
Yeah, I love Lindsay. She's a lot of fun. She's good. She's cheeky. She has good banter, especially with Martha Mataele on her right edge. They talk a lot of crap and have a lot of fun, which is always good in the change room. But no, she's a beast on the field, and I think she's been playing some really good footy for our team. Which has been great. But, yeah, she's all around a good girl.
You know, when you see these young ones coming through, what's it like when you put yourself back in their shoes? Has much changed? Like, are they a little bit more open and talk a fair bit more compared to, say, when you came through? Because I know for the boys' era, we didn't say anything to the older players when they came through. Didn't even get a massage. You just, you know, this is what's happening. This is how we do our things. You just be quiet. But how's that changed, say, for yourself and some of the young girls coming through?
Sammy, I know you love to bring up my age and how long I've been playing.
Wisdom.
Know, right?
No, wisdom. It's wisdom. Well, I thought we established this. And you still look 25
no,
anyway.
I'm kidding. Thank you. I'll take that. No, I think our girls are pretty quiet as well, to be honest. The younger ones, they tend to stick together and one thing, though, is that they are very receptive to feedback, and there are a few of them that do ask a lot of questions as well, which is really good. So for the older ones like myself, I am able to use that wisdom that you keep speaking about to help out those younger players. But no, I think they are pretty like quiet and humble, all of our ones anyway. But then, very good when they're, you know, when it comes to learning, they're always keen to learn as well, which is great.
Yeah, nice. And if you want to hear that interview, stay tuned. We will have Lindsay Tui on very shortly. But let's shift over to some NRLW. It's been two rounds, so we had round two over the weekend. Just looking at these first two rounds, Kiana, which team would you say has been the most dominant so far?
I think it's between two teams. I think the Roosters and the Broncos, two really strong outfits, and I think they've had two good performances. I think this weekend, though, was good to see a couple of teams go close to beating them, although they both did win their games. They weren't as big of score lines compared to round one, which is always good to see. But I think just both of those teams, particularly the Roosters, they are stacked. You know, they've got quality players across the field. And then with, say, the Broncos, they've had the addition of Jessie Southwell in the halves. I think she's brought a lot to their team. Tamia Crafton at the back, who's always you know, one to watch. So I think those two teams are definitely, they've always been the benchmark of the competition probably for the last few years. And, you know, they're still upholding that name for sure.
Yeah, they both had close games, close victories. The Broncos beating the Sharkies 22-16 and the Roosters beating the Knights 12-10. And, you know, there are some great performers so far and teams that have, you know, not done so well in the past. I will mention Salatonga Tuki and their West Tigers. They've been off to a great start. But which team has surprised you in these first two rounds?
Yeah, the Tigers have been one of those surprising teams in a good way. They've come out really strong. They beat my team last week, which sucked for me and my Parramatta girls, but it's a credit to them. I think they've recruited really well. They've got, you know, three very experienced players join them this year, and Racine McGregor in the halves, Shaylee Bent, Holly Wheeler up front. So I think they brought a lot to the team because there's a lot of young girls there, and I think they've just got a good mix and they're playing some good footy together. I thought one other team, who have also been surprisingly good is Canberra Raiders. They had a really big win yesterday against the Wars. So that's good to see them playing some good footy as well.
Yeah, 42-16, the Raiders got over the Warriors.
Yeah, didn't see that one coming.
And the Warriors were, you know, tipped to be a very strong team. I know they're suffering from a lot of injuries, but they do have some great star power there. And looking at last season, you know, we had the likes of Mele Hufanga and Tamika Upton, who, you know, were unreal throughout the whole 2025 season. Which players have stood out to you so far in the first two rounds?
I think I mentioned her just before, but I think Tamika Upton's been really impressive, and she always is. She just, this round was the first NRLW player to score 50 tries. She got 50 try assists as well, and that's in 52 games. So I think that's some huge stats there for Tamika. She's a freak. So she's been outstanding. And I think Taryn Aiken at the Roosters is another one who, she's just returned from injury. She did ACL last year, and she's been excellent for her team since coming back. So I'd say those two girls.
What about some of the rugby union converts that have come over? Who's impressed you out of those girls so far?
Yeah, I think Tegan Levi up at the Gold Coast Titans has been really good. She's playing 5'8", and just from the little bits that I've seen of her games, I think she's doing really well with that role and just taking her opportunities when they're presented to her. I think she's already crossed the line for a couple of tries, which is, you know, great for the Titans. So she'd probably be, the first one that comes to mind from the rugby background.
Sammy likes to keep up to date with all the rugby union converts.
The Exodus. there's 16 in total. That's
like
what
that, isn't it?
Yeah.
He doesn't want them to do so well because more will follow. So.
Yeah, you're not wrong there, bro. Not wrong there at all.
Yeah.
Well, Kiana, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today, and thank you for joining us in late notice, covering for Shelley Long. But all the best in this coming season. And
who does Parra have this week?
They have the Gold Coast Titans.
Titans, yeah. Up in the Goldie, so it's going to be
another tough one then. Hopefully you guys get a win.
Big game for us, yeah.
36-10, the Titans beat Bulldogs. Jamie Chapman was on fire.
Tegan Levi goes all right too. All good. Don't read into the press. It's all good. It's all good. Prepare, Will, and hopefully get the win in the Gold Coast. All the best.
Hello, my name's Alana Sikimedi, and you're listening to Nijin Footy.
All right, today on Nijin Footy, we have Parramatta Eels NRLW superstar Lindsay Tui join us for a chat. She's also represented Fetu Samoa 6 times, and I do remember her scoring the last try for Fetu Samoa against Tonga back in 2024 in Fiji to help secure Samoa's place in the Women's Rugby League World Cup. She joins us right now. Lindsay Tui, welcome to Nijin Footy.
Hello, thanks for having me on today.
I remember that try, Sammy. We're sitting on the side of the
on the far sideline, and she scored on the other side, and
Suva, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought they all carried on a little bit too much for my liking, being a Tongan supporter. No, it was good to see. It was good to see everyone up and about. But we will get to your Samoan journey around playing for Samoa throughout the chat. But I just want to start with, where is your family from in Samoa?
So my parents are from Faleula, Palakai and Bayoshi.
And then what about yourself? Where were you born and raised?
And I was born in Penrith, in a community hospital to be specific, here in Australia.
Oh, the Western Sydney.
The Riff as well. All of us from out in Western Sydney. How good is that?
Yeah.
Obviously, rugby league mad out in Western Sydney. But I believe you're a bit of a netball star as well, coming through the ranks. You know, why did you transition over from netball into rugby league?
I think my little sister said it in her interview. We're a very competitive family, and I always wanted to be better than my older siblings that play as well, rugby. So I think that's why I made the transition over. And I didn't expect to be professional in the sport so quickly, but I guess I could say I'm just a natural talent.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. Your siblings, how many siblings do you have?
I have four.
All sisters or brothers?
One older brother and three sisters.
And when you say competitive and you wanted to be better than your older siblings, which sibling was playing sport that inspired you to transition over to rugby league?
My older sister was playing Tasha Girl at the time I was still playing netball. And I remember asking my dad, hey, can I play rugby too? And my dad initially said no to me first, and then I made a point to prove him wrong, and then I made Tasha go the next year.
Yeah, good.
I could hear the competitiveness in your voice there. Like, you don't muck around when it comes to, making sure that if you want something, you're going to go after it. But, when you had that chat with your dad around playing rugby league in a contact sport, one of the questions we always love to ask is, what was it like for girls in the family to play a contact sport, and that conversation with dad, how hard was it to have those conversations? So for your sisters who ended up playing before you, what was that conversation like with your dad to say that they could play rugby league?
Yeah, I think it was very difficult just with the aspect of it being a contact sport. We're a family that was always injured, and my parents would be worried. I think more stressed about having to take us to physios, hospitals. So I think that's the side where they were like, no, you can't do it. But now I'm glad they said yes.
And, after you make your NRL debut and stuff like that, and then probably, Pacific Island dads, they end up coming around and being the softies of the family and making sure that they get around their kids, especially after some difficult conversations. How has he been now since, your sister, yourself, even your younger one is coming through the ranks? How's he been now around all of you being superstars coming through?
Yeah, he's a lot better now. I would say that he claims that he'd always let us play footy from the start, but it's not the case. He has been a big help and support with our journeys so far, but yeah, he likes to think that he is our coach, mentor, manager, all of the above.
To get to where you are today, what do you reckon the key areas to work on have helped you achieve what you have so far?
I think this one's a bit cliche, but doing the 1%ers when no one's watching has helped a lot. And I think having a family that's that all plays footy has helped, all of us just grow within our own individual journeys. We're always doing extras together, passing the ball at the park, just working on little skills that we don't have to think about in the game because we've practiced it so much together. So, yeah.
It's crazy to think having a competitive family or a competitive group makes you grow so much faster. I have my own example of my own friends, and we wanted to all be successful, and there's a lot of that competitiveness within us helped us. It's if you're going to go and get that record, I'm going to go and break that record. And another good example, my son, which will lead me to my question for you. One son of mine ran around the block. The other one seen him run, so he put the shoes on and made sure he ran the exact same, if not more, than the first son. Do you have that?
And they're twins as well, so they'll be competitive as.
Do you have those examples of you see your sister train, you're like, all right, you want to go train? I'm going to go and double down and try and train harder.
Actually, my older sister, I think had seen me go through a 4K and my time to beat was like a sub 20 or under that. And I think I got 19 minutes and 40 seconds on the day after she had run it. And she'd got 19 minutes and 37 seconds. So she was 3 seconds off my time. And I was like, she definitely did that to like try and beat my time.
I love that.
Just one scenario of us being competitive.
That's the best. And we had your sister Dawn Tui on that Pacific Sports Show not that long ago. Asked her a similar question and she was saying like cards gets pretty competitive as well. So like is it just not the physical style of games? Is it every game in your household where it's competitive?
Yeah, every game. Like Monopoly Duel, I don't know if you guys have played that.
Oh, yeah.
But our brother is the biggest cheater. He'll always try to win. And we know he's a cheater, so we always gang up on him to try to steal his property. So it's not just footy in our household that we're competitive with. It's everything.
Let's shift over to you representing the motherland, the Fetu Samoa. When you first got the call for your selection, what were your thoughts and emotions like when you received that call?
Oh, yeah, it was a very emotional time for me, just getting to represent your country. And, like, I think my sister said it as well, seeing how proud, like, our parents were that I could represent their villages, our last name, and just our family back at home meant so much to me. So it was a very exciting time.
Where were you when you found out that you were in the team?
I'm pretty sure I was parked in front of Macca's. I just got a beep after training and Sowie called me and he was like, how would you like to play for Samoa or something like that? And I was just like, yes, I would love to.
Oh, good.
And did you put the Macca's in the bag and say, oh, I better not eat this?
No, I think I was ready to finish with my meal by then.
And then when you told your parents, what was their reaction like?
Just overwhelmed with joy, I think. Like, my parents don't really get emotional, like, and so how emotional they can be, but they were very happy.
How much has the Samoan culture been a part of your upbringing?
Yeah, it's been massive. I think with Islanders, we're very family-oriented. And with our sport, I think we have to worry about so much more than just playing, with the, like, financial side and, like, providing for our families as well. Sometimes it can be a pro and sometimes it can be a con as well. But, yeah, it's been a blessing.
And going into camp for the very first time, what was that feeling like just seeing a whole group of talented Samoan women ready to represent their country and do something pretty amazing, which we'll get to around World Cup? But, yeah, what was that feeling like just assembling for the first time as a team?
Amazing. I just remember our first day in camp, we were all in the team room, and I was just looking around and I was just so happy that, like, all of these Samoans have gathered together to, like, represent Samoa. I was just so happy that we could all just be in one room.
Yes, they've done a really good job in assembling, you know, quite a strong team for the upcoming World Cup. And I remember when we were in Fiji and I had to come and present on behalf of my other role with the RLPA, but coming into the room and then seeing, you know, Netta, the girls' captain at the time, and then you look around the room, you've got Frank Pritchard, Cole Stanley, and then you've got all the cultural items around the room that create this environment that, you know, although you're in Suva, Fiji, you're also there in the Samoan environment. How much did it mean to you to feel that connection to culture, but also having experienced players, former players that who are also Samoan, be a part of your movement in the Fetu Samoa?
Yeah, honestly, it makes me so grateful for the girls that came before. I've heard heaps of stories of girls that had to sell their cars, sell their homes sometimes just to be a part of those camps like that, whereas now it's all funded for by Rugby League Samoa. So, yeah, just honestly so grateful for the experience and just being able to be a part of a space where Samoans are included. It just shows other Samoan girls that are younger that it's definitely doable for our country, and we can go far.
Yes.
If we have the right opportunities and funding, whatnot, yeah.
We'll get to some of the on-field stuff, you know, around putting on the jersey and singing the anthem, but one thing that really comes out of these Pacific Champs for both the men's and the women's games is the parades. You know, just seeing some of your socials, you know, you girls being at the parades, it would almost feel like you've played a game there, just the amount of energy that you're using. But when you see the flags and you're seeing the people show up, you know, can you describe what it's like amongst the girls when you're having those chats and you're looking out for the first time? It's like, wow, they're actually here for us. Yeah, what's that like?
Yeah, the atmosphere is crazy. Just looking up and seeing how many people we have backing us makes you so happy. And just to see them all gather there, it makes you so emotional. Like, game days are always, I can't even find the word to describe, like, just so how emotional, I can't even speak English right now. How emotional it gets just looking up and singing the anthem to, like, the crowd and them singing it back to us. It's just so amazing.
And the games that you've played for the Fetu Samoa and the blue jersey, is there one moment that sticks out to you?
I would definitely say that last try against Tonga. I just remember me and my centre going back and forth at it, and we played para together. And I just remember her pointing me out after a tackle, like a really good tackle she made, and she's like, run it straight at me again. And then I think that last try was just like the last laugh and the last get back. So it was really good to score that try. That's probably my most favourite moment.
I remember that battle. What was her name again?
Kate Fallon,
yeah. And she was on the left side, you're on the right side, and you were just going at it.
Yeah.
And she had a couple big tackles. And I remember, I actually remember you now, where I was like, oh, actually, she's getting it over. And then that last try when all the girls just come running in. Well,
don't say that to her. She's competitive. She goes, yeah. No, she did it.
Oh, no, I mean Lindsay getting on top towards the back end. And then I remember my mate over here was sitting down and he's having to cry because he's Tongan.
I rolled up the Tongan flag there and put it in the bum bag. Nah, I'm joking. I'm still right back up. No, but, you know, honestly, seeing you score that try and seeing the celebrations and seeing someone like Frankie Pritchard, who has done it all at the top level, seeing how emotional he got and being part of the coaching staff, like that was not just a victory for Samoa, but honestly, it was a victory for just seeing Pacific Island women on the main stage and seeing guys like Frankie just so overwhelmed with love and joy and everything.
He was holding his tears back.
We tried to interview him after the game, man. He was holding them right back. And, bro, Mount Druitt, he's staunch. On the field, he's staunch. And to see him, you know, vulnerable like that doesn't happen often. And obviously it must have been special to be in that camp. But what were the words that were said after the game? Because that was a pretty big feat around qualifying for World Cup. But, like, when you got into the dressing sheds, you know, what were the words that were said around how special that achievement was?
Yeah, I think the coaching staff said to us how proud they were of how we performed that day, but just the overall achievement of us finally being able to put our country in the World Cup. But yeah, I honestly, it's such a blur to me now. I can't really remember what was said after that game, but everyone was like so happy.
Last question from me. For any young Samoan girl playing any sport and, you know, even rugby league, what advice would you give to that young girl who is one day hoping to one day play for the Fetu Samoa?
I would say just keep working hard. And as cliche as it sounds, hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard. So I think continue to be yourself. Keep showing up for yourself. No one else will do it for you. So keep working and chipping away.
I felt like you just said that to a young you, like yourself. That's all. And then, yeah, don't let your sisters put it over you.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally for me, obviously going into a World Cup year, I know you're going to be working hard, but for you to cement your spot in that team and be there, you know, what are you doing to be able to make sure that your name gets called?
I think the best advice someone gave to me after the game that I just played is making sure that I have something different that sets me apart from all the other centres that could be selected. So I think just working on different little skills that I can implement into my game sets me apart from other centres.
Mm. What position in netball did you play?
Wing attack.
Centre wing attack.
Wing attack.
Oh, I just had a guess there too. Got it right. Yeah, just guessed wing attack.
I'm just thinking centre, yeah. Nice little offload.
Oh, offload, little netball, yeah. Pass over the top. Is that what you're thinking?
Nice over the top or under the...
I'm thinking chip and chase maybe.
A little coverage.
Yeah. Okay, make sure, just make sure they come off, because if it doesn't, that's how you get hooked as well.
Or fly in. You know what set some of the great centres apart was the Steve Maddie flying in and then...
Cut him in half. Anyway, now you do.
Don't listen to us.
We're washed up.
We never played centre. We're always in the middle.
Never got anywhere near what you have achieved. But anyway, all good. Lindsay, it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to sit and chat with you. You've got some wise words, very mature for your age. And I wish you all the best. And I hope you get to the big dance at the World Cup, because I'd love to see Samoa or Tonga. Probably more Tonga. But anyway, I'd love to see any of our island teams at the World Cup Grand Final. So much love and all the best.
Thank you very much for having me on today.
Give me three answers for this one.
Yes, if you're just joining us, this is Nijin Footy with Tinero Aruna and Sammy Wykes. And we're about to wrap up our Monday Nijin Footy show with the game of Give Me Three. Now, we ask each other... Each week, one of us will ask the other a give me three question. The last couple of weeks have been a bit funny because we're like, I'll answer these three different questions. But anyway, we keep a score. The winner at the end of the year gets to choose a jersey of their choice, and the loser has to buy it for them. So I'm winning 24 points to 21, and it's Sammy's turn to ask me the question. So make sure
those
you...
Those questions... We're warranted sure the last 2 weeks.
Play along at home while we're playing Give Me Three.
Yeah, so like, again, I just want to revert back to the last 2 weeks of Give Me Three because of the milestones. Don't fall asleep on me, T. I know that you're nodding off. You don't want to hear about it, but it was a special occasion for Jason Dalmalolo and Nella Dubol. So I thought they deserved their own little sort of category there for Give Me Three. But we're back into the saddle, and you're probably going to hate this question.
What do you got for us?
It's you mentioned Jai Arrow's birthday.
Yep.
And everyone's been doing the Arrow try celebration.
Yep.
Yeah, I really like it. You know, everyone's pulling the arrow out and point it to the sky. And
don't tell me which players have been
No. I want to know if you know, and this to me, this is a great question. Iconic moments in movies or movies where the bow and arrow is the main weapon for that character. Give me three. Ooh. Of those type of characters or movies or moments.
Okay. Well, Robin Hood.
Yes, Robin Hood is. I knew you were going to get that one.
Robin Hood.
Yep.
Who else has Arrow? Oh, the guy off Lord of the Rings.
The blonde elf. Yes, the Lord of the Rings. There's two.
Lord of the Rings. And...
Oh, mate, this is easy.
This is a great question, Sam.
You like it?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, man. I thought long and hard about this one.
There are so many, but we are going to go with who else are using arrows? Oh, Troy. Let's go with Troy.
Troy, yes. The movie Troy. And if
so
you,
is that the Give Me Three?
That's Give Me Three. So
give
you got three.
Three movies or moments that use an arrow.
Yeah, I just thought I was watching, you know, all the try celebrations thought, so there was the movie 300. Remember that,
yes.
That scene? Where the arrows covered the sunlights. There was Rambo as well. So Sylvester Stallone, Rambo. That was his chosen weapon. Hunger Games. Yep.
Oh, Hunger Games.
And Hawkeye from the Avengers.
Okay.
So there you have it. So I knew you would have got that.
That's a great question, Sammy. Yeah, because you got me three. Up to 27 and Sammy on 21.
Awesome. But anyway, that's our time up for Nijin Footy for this week. A big thank you to Lindsay Tui and Kiana Takarangi for joining us. Make sure you find us wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. And we'll catch you all on Friday for Nijin Footy Fridays.
Ka kite. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.